need to go old school here. Let's hear that sound. Ooh, there we are. So you guys probably all know that there's a bit of an upheaval going on in photography. Even the sales of digital cameras have just been nosediving in the past couple of years. And it's not a big secret why that's happening. You know, the camera that's built into your cell phone has gotten to be really pretty decent in quality. And it's something that you have with you all the time. And any picture you take, you can shoot it off to your friends or put it on your social media accounts instantly. So that kind of ubiquitous connected photography, it's still really new. But the impacts that it's having are kind of interesting. So, I think I don't need to explain this picture to too many people, but think how surprising it is that most of you have seen this already. I mean, this is off in some high school in Texas, right? But because somebody was there with a cell phone, this picture got tweeted around the world in hours. So the last time there was a revolution like this in photography, we've got to go back 128 years. And that's when George Eastman figured out how to coat a photosensitive emulsion onto something flexible you could roll up on a spool. And he put that into a new kind of camera, which he named Kodak. And that thing let you go out and take a whole bunch of pictures in a row, and you didn't have to deal with all the crazy apparatus that previous cameras had, like glass plates, beakers of chemicals, and all that nonsense. That was the point when photography became something everybody could do, and that was film. So today the idea of shooting on a film camera seems a little archaic. You got to carry around a separate device, and every time you click the shutter, trying to get your cat to pose for a picture, it's going to cost you some money, like 20 cents or 60 cents. That depends on what type of film you're using. But and we know the way this narrative is supposed to go with all these other things. Like, we used to have separate devices to play music and shoot video and as a portable computer, and they've all one by one shrunk down into the cell phone. So why are cameras different? Well, technology is a glittering lure. But you might be surprised to know that there are still several companies who are manufacturing and selling film. And even though the volumes have gone way down, they claim they're still breaking even at it. And another funny thing that I've noticed is that walking around in Ann Arbor, when I do see somebody carrying a film camera, lately it's usually somebody in their 20s. So what's going up with, you know, what's going on with those crazy people who shoot film? Well, I'm one of them. And I just really love the way an image looks on film. So tonight I'm just here to give a very personal talk about why I think film is great and some of the things I think are significant about it. So the Japanese company Fujifilm, they're the guys who sell film in the green boxes, they made an estimate that these days we're shooting 20 times as many pictures as people did in the peak years of film. And you know, the thing about that fire hose of photography is that when you take a picture and you put it up on your social media account, it only takes a couple months before it kind of scrolls off the bottom of the timeline. And it's almost like there's a mindset that a photograph is something expendable and it's something whose value goes down over time. And that is completely wrong. The value of a photograph increases over time and in ways that you can't necessarily anticipate. So if you think about some pictures you have on your phone right now, you know, there are probably just some pictures of you chilling with some friends. This is exactly that same kind of picture, but it's 82 years old. And I love everything about this picture. I love how it's kind of cockeyed. I love you can see the shadow of the photographer over here. And there's some interesting history, because this is out in Nebraska during the Dust Bowl. So what the heck was life like back then? But for you guys out there, there might be other things that you're checking out, you know, like the clothes, those crazy eyeglasses. If you're a car buff, I think it's an old Chrysler. For me, though, there's a whole other level, which is that this woman here is my mother. And this is when she's 18 years old. This is her first big adventure in life. When, you know, she finished school and took a job far from home. And why this is meaningful to me is that when I was growing up, my mother was not the happiest person. So to have this glimpse into her life here, where she's young and ready to take on the world, this is really precious to me. And it's a thing that I only have because this picture survives for 82 years. So you just can't know what the meaning of the picture will become over time. So I love this picture that my dad took. Great apron. But you know, it's not like he was thinking to himself, I want to create an iconic image of 1950s America. These were friends who were visiting and they had a cookout. But I put this picture up on Flickr, and I was later contacted by a movie production company. They were like, we want to use this as a still in a montage sequence. You can't know what the meaning will be. I'm a little older than some of the people out here, so maybe you haven't experienced this yet. So that's 1982. And can I just say, where does that sweater? I wish I had that sweater. I got into photography through my dad, and he was a nerd himself. And so one of the things he kind of drilled into me was that I should always keep my, you know, develop films in little protective envelopes and keep my proof sheets all nicely organized and dated. And so that's the thing that I've been keeping up since junior high school. So what it means is that in the way that some people might keep journals or old correspondence, I have this great archive of my life history, and I can just jump to any particular year really, really easily and get this really evocative visual memory of it. So the kinds of things I'm talking about here, there could be just as true of the pictures that people have on their cell phones right now. So the question I want to ask is, what would it take for the pictures that you took today to survive for 82 years? So, because it seems really challenging, and this is the form that all our memories are in today, but you know, what is it going to take to have that stuff stay accessible? So because we don't yet have an expert to give that talk, I'm just going to fake it. Just two key points are that your photo has to survive in some kind of stable physical medium, you know, whether digital or analog. But that's not quite enough. You also need to know what pictures you have, where you put them, what it's going to take to get them back. So when you're comparing a digital image versus a photochemical image, the great thing about digital is that you can make multiple copies, and you know they can be stored, not in your house. So if there's some disaster at your house, you're still protected. With film, there are things that can damage film. You know, you can have mold or fading. But the thing is that some of those things are a little bit more gradual and visible. And if you notice in time, you can step in and do something about it. This is a picture that's about 100 years old, and it comes from Antarctica. There's a team that's trying to preserve the sites of the original explorers of Antarctica, and they came across this wad of negatives that were frozen together and in ice. And so they carefully took these and peeled them apart, and this is one of the images. So that's some serious neglect, and yet something survives. And even though the image is kind of messed up and damaged, you can still get something out of it. It's only partially gone. Now, of course, the deal with digital media is, like, I'm sure all of us have some horror story about a digital disaster where our computer didn't boot, or your phone was stolen and you lost all your pictures. And a bigger problem is that we don't really have any digital storage media that has ever managed to stay mainstream for more than about 15 years. So of course nowadays the buzzword is that we're going to put all our stuff in the cloud. And so the problem with the cloud is that it's still your bits have to be saved in some kind of physical hardware. It's just that that hardware is owned by a corporation. And that corporation needs to have a business model that gets money out of you. So I'm personally actually quite worried about the 3,500 pictures I have on Flickr, because Flickr is owned by Yahoo, and you might have heard that Yahoo is not doing so great. So tomorrow morning I could wake up to the headlines that Flickr is sold or being closed down. So the thing I'm getting at is that with all this digital media, you know, it's up to you to keep migrating your stuff, right? And if you space out, and remember, 82 years, that's 2098. So you're going to have to keep migrating your digital photos from one storage media to another, or one server to another, And if you ever miss, your bits may still survive in some device, but if you've lost access, you've lost that discoverability that I was talking about. It's up to your memory, like, what pictures did I have? Are they worth going through the hassles of, you know, finding the guy who still has a computer with the IDE interface? And that's a point where you might come across some old device and just think, toss it. We know that this works. So you take some prints and you stick them on a page and you put it on the shelf. It endures completely passively without having to migrate anything. This is exactly the kind of album that the picture of my mother comes out of. And when you have a picture in your hands, it is its own human readable metadata. Nobody had to type in keywords. Nobody has to rename the files. You just use your eyes, and it's a dog. Now, if all you have is a sheet of negatives, it's a little bit harder to figure out what you've got, because you can't really recognize faces very well. But, you know, if I hold this up to the light, I say, like, okay, there are some bicycles, and that might be enough to jog your memory, like, oh, Berkeley, it all comes back to me, you know, and so that's enough to just get you started and say, like, okay, this is worth spending more time on. So you might think that that kind of situation I'm talking about is a little bit hypothetical and doesn't really happen in real life. But does anyone recognize this face? So this is Vivian Meyer. And if you don't know the story, back in the 50s, Vivian Meyer was working as a nanny for families in Chicago. But every free minute, she was out on the streets with her cameras. And at the end of her life, she kind of dropped off the map, and all of her stuff ended up in some storage unit, including 100,000 negatives. And some guy who was going to do a book about Chicago architecture started pulling her negatives out, and he thought, geez, out of all of this, there's got to be something I can use. But what it turned out that they were mostly kind of odd pictures of people. So he started scanning these pictures and sharing them online with groups who are into street photography as an art form. And those people flipped out. They were like, who is this? Scan more of these things. So it turns out that Vivian Meyer is now recognized as one of the great street photographers of the 20th century. And so if you haven't heard the story and you're curious about it, check out this film, Finding Vivian Meyer, which was co-produced by the guy John Maloof, who made that discovery. And check out her pictures at vivianmeyer.com. Some of my favorites are her selfies. So unfortunately, I can't promise you that if you take up using a film camera, you'll be discovered as a genius posthumously. But let's say that your interest in photography is beyond just, you know, recording some memories, and you'd like to create images that are kind of beautiful and striking. So the look of film photography has some distinctive things, and that's the bit that I want to talk about next. Excuse me, one second. I'm hesitating slightly to show this picture because I'm concerned that somebody out there will be asking, which Instagram filter is that? And so, of course, it gets the whole thing kind of upside down. So Hipstamatic and Instagram and VSCO and lots of software that's around has these filters. So you start with a digital image that's a little bit characterless, and then these filters kind of sprinkle a little flavor packet on top of it. But the thing that is, they're all of them are kind of looking back nostalgically at the look of film. Even the names. The name Instamatic is the name of a Kodak camera from the 1960s. So with the photograph from film, the look of the image comes out of some very concrete things, some physical things, the chemistry, the mechanics, the optics of the process. This picture is a square. That's because the piece of the film in the camera was a square. The colors are a little bit funky, and that's because this is a really early Kodak print film. Also, this negative has aged a little bit, because that's me again. And so in the decades since then, the the color dyes have shifted in ways that are kind of interesting. So I'm sure this the white border around this picture seems really familiar. Of course, this is a Polaroid print. And so, you know, you can get an app for your smartphone that puts that around your pictures. And it's even a sort of a symbol that software sometimes uses, saying, click here to take a picture. But the thing about that big white border is that this big section at the bottom that's bigger, that needs to be there because it's hiding a pod of chemical paste. So the way a Polaroid works is that it's a sandwich with a clear cover sheet on the top, and underneath that there's a negative. And after you take the picture, it gets spit out the front of the camera, and a couple of steel rollers burst the pod of chemicals and squishes out into the middle of the sandwich. And where the chemicals react with the negative, it creates colored dyes, and it gives you the picture. So here is another look that software sometimes tries to emulate. You can see how it gets sort of dim and a little bit soft in the corners. So that happens for an optical reason. This is a picture taken with a Holga, which is a very cheap plastic camera. And the thing is that its lens is just very basic and doesn't quite illuminate all the way into the corners. So honestly, it's a defect. But for a lot of subjects, it looks kind of interesting. It sort of draws your eye into the picture. Black and white. So for the first 100 years of photography, black and white is all you got, because there was no color film. But even today, a lot of photographers really appreciate the look of black and white. I mean, it tends to emphasize the light and the shadow and the contours around things. The British company Ilford, they sell film in the white boxes that I showed. They have never made a color film. They just make black and white. Something you can see a little bit of in this picture is film grain. But let me show you a picture where that's a little bit clearer. So when you manufacture film, you can make it more light sensitive by increasing the diameter of each little crystal of silver bromide. And the trade-off, of course, is that if you make the crystals too big, the image can look a little gritty. Grainy black and white is a look that you might associate with documentary photography. And the reason for that is just that photojournalists who had to take pictures in all sorts of bad lighting conditions, they needed that extra sensitivity. But I find that grain can also just give the picture a really nice kind of soft atmospheric look, like this one. So this isn't exclusively a film thing. The thing I'm pointing out here is you see that there's just a very shallow zone that's in sharp focus. And beyond that, everything kind of melts away. So what causes that optically is when the diameter of the glass of the camera lens is a couple inches across. That makes the background go out of focus like that. And this look is really nice for portraiture because it draws your attention to the subject. And if there's some kind of mess in the background, like there were some parked cars back here, it just makes it all disappear. And this is a look you can get with the fancy digital camera, but it might be a $2,000 camera. The thing is that you can go on eBay, and if you buy a camera with the right lens, it's like $50 and you can get this look. And that's a great thing about film cameras, is that there were so many of them made that even really nice ones that take interchangeable lenses are just not that expensive now. So here's a picture where I've switched off to a long telephoto lens. And not only does that let you get a nice clear picture of something that's 100 feet away, you can see it does this interesting thing with the perspective where these guys are sort of piled up on top of each other. It makes things look a little bit more abstract. And creatively, that can be an interesting thing to play around with too. Okay, this one's just kind of a freaky accident where I was taking the film out of my Holga and noticed it hadn't wound up tightly enough, so I had to grab it and twist the spool so light wasn't leaking in at the edges. But after I developed the film, I found these sort of strange flames coming in from the edges. It's like spirit messages were coming through my plastic camera. And here's a look from using the wrong type of film for the lighting conditions, and there's a similar look where you take the film and you develop it in the wrong chemistry. So I could keep going on talking about all these different looks from film. But the point that I want to make is, you know, I understand why it's fun to have software on a smartphone that can sort of apply some of these looks to your images. But there's something that seems a little strange to me about that. I mean, you have a processor on your phone. It's very powerful. It could be doing anything as far as adjusting the color palette or messing around with the picture in lots of ways. So it seems strange to me that so much attention has gone into this really narrow thing of emulating the look of film. It's like wood grain Formica, you know. Your plastic countertop could be any color, any pattern, but you know, it seems a little kitschy to want to have it look like walnut. I mean, if walnut is what you like, the real thing does still exist. Nerd, co-boss Mariah Peeble. I'm sorry she's not out here for this. Yeah, I heard one. Yep. Yay. Back in December, I was reading an interview with a Hollywood cinematographer, and he was explaining why he still prefers to shoot movies on film. And he said, there's more emotion in the emulsion. And I don't want to sound too mystical, but I would wear that t-shirt. Okay, I can see Sarah hovering, so I'm going to get to the nerdy part last here. If you're a nerd, you're probably kind of into mechanisms and technology, and old film cameras just can be really delightful as objects. There's all these lovingly machined little knobs and dials, and they go click, 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 and it's just a very different user interface from a touch screen where you've got to be looking down to make sure you're tapping the right thing. This is the Argus. So if you don't know, 60 years ago, millions of cameras were built in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the factory is still standing over there at somebody's a fan. The factory is still standing over there at 4th Street and William, and there's a little display case in the second floor lobby if you want to check out some of the cameras that they made. So what I find is that when you find a film camera that you really like, it's not like it goes more obsolete over time. So tonight I've brought along this camera that I use all the time, takes great pictures. It was built when I was 6 years old, right? And it's great not to be on some upgrade treadmill where every 2 years you've got to go buy the whizziest new thing, you know? I really appreciate the technological continuity of film. I mean, when I shoot a roll of black and white and develop it and make a proof sheet, I'm really using exactly the same process that my father used when he took this strip of film in 1938. So I want to end with the camera that my father used to shoot that picture. This is the Kodak that my dad was using in his 20s. So one day in 1942, my dad went to the beach with a young woman named Maggie Tevens. And some of the sunshine that was shining down on them that day reflected off of Maggie, and it went into this lens, and the lens focused it on some Kodachrome slide film. And that jiggled around some molecules in the emulsion, and it made this picture. So my father has not been alive for a few years, and I'm sorry, I don't know about Maggie. She would have to be 100. But this picture, the memory of that sunny day, is alive. It is here with us. The piece of film that was in that camera is in the room with us. It's the slide in the slide projector. So I think Don Draper got something right when he said, this device, it's a time machine. So I hope I've gotten you guys to think a little bit about your own pictures and what might happen to them in the future. And if I did make anybody curious about film cameras, I have put up a special page on my blog, Silverbased. And I am Vox Photo on Flickr and Twitter. So thank you all for coming out for my slideshow.